Like and welcome everybody. Like to welcome everybody to the March meeting of the Upper Trinity Groundwater Conservation District Board. We're meeting here in our offices in Springdown, Texas, as well as virtually for those who can't be in attendance. Those who are attending virtually, if you wish to speak on an item, please use the chat function on your phone or laptop or iPad or means of communication so Doug will know. Director Watts, would you call roll, please, sir?
Jared Reynolds.
He is absent.
Shannon Nave.
Here.
Tim Watts, here. Don Micah.
Here.
Brent Wilson.
Here.
Mike Berkeley.
Here.
Tracy Messler.
Here.
And a quorum.
We do have a quorum. I'll remind everybody we require five affirmative votes to pass anything. May I please stand and join me in the pledges to the flags?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one indivisible.
Doug, do we have anybody signed up for this general public comment?
I have not received any.
Okay. And show that we're going into our public hearings at 5:02. First item on the agenda is discuss and public comment on District's 2023 Management Plan update, including adoption of Resolution 23-001, adopting a management plan and take necessary action. Doug?
Yes, sir. Just briefly, I'm going to get through this part and then answer any questions. At the December meeting, we took action to adopt updated DFCs. That was kind of the last step in that process. We'd finally received updated MAGs, model available groundwater from the Water Development Board. And then once we received those MAGs, we're required to update our management plan to get the new DFCs and new MAGs into the plan. Sorry, I think there's some more people that are waiting to get in. Let them in. And now that we've got the MAGs, so we've just got to update the management plan to get that stuff into the management plan. So there are basically the only thing we're updating in the management plan is the table itself with the DFC. There's some other in-text references, some references in the bibliography related to the new GAM report or MAG report from the Water Development Board. But mostly the changes are simply this. And this is, if you remember going back 5 years ago, we updated pumping numbers. Staff did a very thorough audit of historic data, and we updated pumping based on historic data and splits across the aquifer. And that's what these changes reflect. So that's literally all we're changing. Happy to answer any questions, but you know, we've got to adopt the management plan and get it out to the Water Development Board for their review. So if you'll have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Board, have any questions?
Just click it.
Any of the public have any questions on the management plan? If not, Chair would entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 23-001, adopting a management plan.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Micah. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Director Wilson. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number two, receive any public comments, request to contest, and the general manager's report and recommendations regarding the following applications for permits, permit amendments, and or requests for exceptions, the district's water well spacing or minimum track size requirements. Item A is applicant owner Store Master Funding out of Chicago. Location is 2188 East Highway 380 in Decatur. They're requesting a permit volume of 300,000 gallons a year. Doug?
Sir. So just a real quick refresher. For all operating permits, District Rule 2.9 states that we shall grant the lesser of the reasonable non-speculative amount or the applicable annual production allowable per contiguous acre. So Just a little bit of brief background on this one, Stormaster. This is an existing facility in Eastern Wise County, off on the south side of Highway 380. They have basically, what they told us is they'd received a requirement from their insurance company to be able to produce a certain amount of water over a certain short period of time for fire safety. Their existing well didn't cover that, so they're asking to drill a 200 gallon a minute well on their locations to meet that requirement. Because of this, it brings their whole system into the non-exempt status. So we've included their existing wells. I think only one of them is operational, which they just use for restrooms there. The proposed new well, 19284, 200 gallons a minute, 752 feet total depth, 6-inch casing, 5-horsepower pump. I think that's 50. That's my bad. It's a typo. Required spacing is 3,250 feet to the nearest well and 1,000 feet to the property line. There is one well within the required spacing, and there are six properties within 1,000 feet. You can see on the maps here, the map on the left showing the property lines, these little flags, these call outs are the separate properties that were noticed. And then the one well, there's a few wells, but it's this one right here, the well 1110 is the only other deep well. The rest of them are much shallower. There's a few others, so they meet vertical offset. And we've actually talked to Kerry Graham with Sauter, that's one of their wells, and I've talked to him about it. They received notice. So maximum groundwater allocation under an operating permit under 5.2D1 is described as the average aquifer thickness or depth of the proposed well multiplied by 500 multiplied by the acreage. They own 23.945 acres. Average aquifer thickness is 650 feet, 752 foot well depth. So we use the 650 feet. Comes up with a total allocation of just over 7.7 million gallons. They're requesting 300,000 gallons per year. That request is based on filling up their storage tank that they have for fire suppression, I think once or twice. Kyle's not here. I don't know the exact number. And then some incidental bathroom use and stuff like that. So it's a very small amount of water they plan on using, at least based on their discussion. So we did some impact analysis. It is worth noting when we do this impact analysis, the tool that we use, it's not really designed to model a well that's really only used once or twice, right? So these impacts are kind of skewed to the more extreme, because the analysis kind of assumes that the well is pumping on and off throughout the year rather than just pumping, you know, to fill up that tank and maybe not pumping in all year, right? At least I would hope they would hope that it wouldn't have to pump, because that means it had a fire, right? So again, if it pumped all year, and one thing it is noted, because you'll get to my recommendation in a minute, if it is pumped all year long or regularly, it would have quite a bit of impact to the local area. So that's worth noting. So now with my recommendation is to approve the permit in the amount as presented in 300,000 gallons. Now, as far as the exception request, should the board wish to approve the exception, I would recommend adding the following stipulations, which requires entering into a monitoring well agreement, complete the water well so that we can install a transducer or a sounder, and the applicant shall provide a geophysical log. But the last two are the main ones. And the only reason I would recommend even considering this exception is because they've stated that they really don't intend to use the well, right? Based on conversations, it's for insurance purposes. So my recommendation is because the applicant has stated the well will only be used for fire protection, if the applicant overpumps the permitted volume, then I think the exception should immediately be revoked. And if the applicant ever seeks to amend the operating permit, then we may revisit the exception at that time. So in other words, what they're asking for under their permit, well, allowable, clearly within district rules. The exception request, you know, they're saying they're not going to use this well. It's just for fire suppression. They don't intend to use it. So if that's the case, okay, they shouldn't be using it, shouldn't cause that much of an impact to the area. So if we grant the exception, I would put those stipulations on there that if they over the pump their permit, then we revoke the exception. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead, Doug.
Yes, sir.
You know, you painted something black and white and things happen that none of us can foresee.
Correct.
I'm a little bothered by it says because the applicant has stated that the well will only be used for fire protection.
Correct.
If it over pumps, the exception is immediately revoked. You know, I'd like to soften that a little bit and say it's presumed to be revoked unless they can prove that there was a justification for it.
Okay.
You know, when you paint black and white in the future, sometimes it just doesn't work.
So we can say something like, rather than that, Mike, how about some language that if they overpump their permit, then the board shall reconsider the exception.
That's okay.
Right. That way it comes back to you guys and you guys get to decide, do you get to keep this exception or are we going to revoke it?
I mean, they may have a multitude of fires in one year.
Yeah.
There may be grass fires that they.
Correct.
The water district, I mean, the fire department needs to access that well.
Correct.
I was going to say, have that language unless the water usage is directly used for a fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some wiggle room.
I think just by saying that the board shall reconsider the exception, it would give us an opportunity to talk about it, right?
Well, right now, you know, with a 200-gallon a minute well, 300,000 gallons a year, that's a 25-hour pump period a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had the same concern that's
not very much.
Well, and they in effect created a system between the existing small shallow well and this one.
Correct.
And the bathroom use is actually from the smaller well.
Correct.
But we've capped them at 3 times their storage tank.
Correct. You know, and they had an
opportunity. Came up if we have another range fire like what's hit Palo Pinto County or hit Montague County, very possibly. That's a location where they could fill up tenders.
Right.
Such. I like your suggestion of at least shall reconsider.
Reconsider. So
there are extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, no, there are. And that way, like I said, if we add that language, they shall reconsider, then it has to come back to the board and then the board can decide whether or not what they did was egregious enough to revoke their.
There is a meter on the wells.
Well, correct.
So we'll be able to track that semi-annually.
Correct.
Okay. Because as he said, 200 gallons a minute, they can take a lot of water out in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Correct.
So,
hey, Doug, it's Shauna. I am on the call if anyone has any questions.
Yes, ma'am. Shauna is with the applicant. So, any other questions for me or applicant?
Any other comments? Board's heard the general manager's recommendation and I guess at a modification from the board.
Why don't you let him make the file his, I'll second his motion.
I want to say we're recommending adopting the general manager's recommendations with the modification of number 4.
Yeah, save and accept for the explicit terms of number 4, which should read as what she said.
Okay. Gotcha.
That. Should they exceed that amount?
The board shall reconsider the exception.
Instead of revoke, reconsider.
Correct. And I'd make that motion.
Okay. And Director Micah, you said you would second it? Okay. Have a motion for Director Berkeley, a second from Director Micah, as amended.
Yes, as amended.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Shauna. Item B, applicant owner Autodrome LLC, 7629 FM 51 North Decatur. Requested permit volume of 1.5 million gallons per year. Doug?
Yes, sir. So this is a racetrack, raceway, northeast of Decatur, almost up by Slidell off 51. Again, they had some existing wells. Previously, the land that's been brought together recently was tracks owned by a couple different people. Some of them were registered wells. It was a different owner. And they're now adding a second, a new well that brings the system into a non-exempt system, brings it to a non-exempt system. This will be, the well will be used for restroom facilities, car washes, stuff like that. And so they're proposing new well 19160. It's 400 foot, orange casing, 10 gallon a minute well. It meets all spacing requirements, 150 foot from nearest well, 50 foot to property line. So it clearly meets all property line spacing, all well to well spacing. They're asking for 1.5 million gallons a year. Under district rules, they own just over 440 acres. Aquifer thickness, 708 feet, well, 400 feet. So it's limited by the 400 foot depth of well. Comes out to a total allowable allocation of 88,299,400 gallons. They are requesting 1.5 million gallons. Again, we did some impact analysis, fairly minimal impact. There is some, and we ran the impact analysis with all the wells pumping. So it's a little bit probably higher pumping than what they would actually see in on an annual basis, because we don't put the 1.5 total in. We put in daily highs and daily lows. So I think these are a little bit skewed on the high side as well, just because they shouldn't. Just in talking with them, I don't expect them to use. It's not a water intensive activity. They're not irrigating a lot. It's literally just a few bathrooms and then some car washes for when they have races there.
And this was go kart racing.
I believe it is actual cars. I believe. I've never been up there. I thought that was my understanding.
It's mainly on weekends.
Yeah, correct.
And I think it's go kart. I've been to go kart races there.
You have? I think they may do both.
Okay.
Because I know they're looking at putting in. They talk about people coming in and staying, you know, like a couple times a year for the week. So I think they have.
By there and saw a lot of campers and so forth. So
I think they probably do both, Mike.
More than likely seasonal.
Correct.
And they have like 3-day events where they come in and then you won't see them for a month.
Yeah, correct. So I wouldn't expect the water use to be very much. What they're asking for is well under what they could be allocated. So my recommendation is approval of the permit as presented in the amount of 1.5 million gallons.
Can we go back two pages?
Sure.
I think that's 778.
Yeah, it's from the previous one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's 88 million.
It is. It is 88 million. It's right about there. It's 88.29 million.
Thank you.
I mean, it is a large tract of land. It's like 400 and something acres. So. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any other questions of staff?
You know where it is.
Any from the public? Chair to entertain a motion to approve the general manager's recommendation to approve the operating permit 198-W-OP.
So moved.
Motion by Director Nave. Do I hear a second? Second by Director Berkeley. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. And show we're through with the public, adjourning the public hearings at 5:19. Regular meeting and board meeting agenda. Item one, of course, is a holdover, discuss and consider appointment of a person to fill the directorship. We had discussed at our January meeting, waiting until all seven of us are here. Is that in agreement with everybody? Just to wait till we're all here? Okay. Then I'm on table item one. Item two is the consent agenda, which are normal and customary non-controversial items. Any board member can pull any item off for separate discussion by the board. Improves minutes from the regular board meeting and public hearing on January 26th. The cancellation notice of our February meeting. Approval of bank statements ending January 31st and February 28th. Approval of investment report. Payment of bills and invoices received through today. Reimbursement for expenses incurred on behalf of the district through today. And approval of requests for extension applications submitted through today. One question on the extensions. Several months ago, we kind of set up, we could do X number of extensions and then it had to come to the board. Right. Are any of these getting close to that?
We have one, I believe, that was getting close. I think there's one on there that this is the last one, and then it would be an item, an action item.
I'd ask staff to notify those individuals of that they either need to execute the permit or they're probably going to have to recon. That'll have to be on our agenda for next month to decide what we do. We've not decided that.
Well, If they ask for another one, yeah.
If they ask for another one, it's coming back to the board.
Correct. Yeah, it'll be a line item rather than on the consent agenda.
Sorry for the diversion, but it dawned on me that we've been doing that several months, and we probably had somebody getting close. So anything need to pull anything off the consent agenda? If not, I accept a motion to accept the consent agenda as presented. Motion by Director Watt. Do I hear a second? Second by Director Berkeley. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 3 is moot. Item number 4, discussion regarding proposed interlocal agreement related to the groundwater management area 8, funding for update to groundwater availability model, including but not limited to authorizing the district representative for GMA 8 to execute the agreement on behalf of the district and take necessary action. Doug?
Yes, sir. So just a brief update. I've had this in my management report for several months. Back in the summer, late summer, early fall, GMA 8 voted to release an RFQ for a GAM update. The primary thing reason for this GAM update is so ModFlow 6, if you're not familiar with modeling, ModFlow is basically the code, the language that operates the model. ModFlow 6 is the newest, latest, greatest. It's a lot more adaptable, will allow for a lot more localized modeling. It's just a big update to the modeling language. And additionally, we've all of us districts, especially us, have gathered quite a bit of data as far as well logs. You know, we've got a logging rig, pump tests. So we've got a lot of data to update the model. So we released the RFQ. A committee of, I think, 6 of us interviewed the respondents. And then we selected Intera as unanimously the group, the committee selected Intera. And earlier this month, we met at the full GMA and accepted the scope of work for the project at the GMA level and tentatively approved the interlocal agreement based on each individual board's approval of that agreement or their contribution to it. A little backstory. Last time we updated the GAM, back up. This update is going to be $591,000. Last time it was well over $1 million. I think it was getting close to $2 million. And 4 districts covered the cost, us and 3 others. This time we've got at least 8 districts I expect to fully participate in funding and the 3 others to kick in. Some of the other districts have budgets less than $200,000 a year. And those districts, at least 3 of them, one of them I may actually participate fully. 2 of them will likely kick in probably $20,000 total. This will be spread over 2 years. So if we do 1/8 of it, it came out to about $73,000 for the district. So about $36,000 per year this year and next year. We actually budgeted $85,000 this year because before we got the scope of work, we didn't know what the price was going to be. So we made sure we had plenty in the budget to cover it if we had to. So the cost came in well under less than half of, you know, on the annual basis, half of what we were expecting, what we budgeted. So if the board approves this, then, you know, as a district representative, I'll be able to execute the interlocal agreement. What I'm recommending is that the board authorize me to execute that agreement and approve an amount we can do not to exceed 1/8 of the total cost. I think a lot of districts are coming up with that number just to, so we have some concrete numbers. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'm just glad to see other districts stepping up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Massey, since you went through this twice.
I have a question, please.
Sure.
We went through this once before, and my memory is we had language in our agreement that said that if the districts failed to meet their agreed upon numbers, that it wouldn't fall back on this meeting to make up what they didn't pay. Rather, it would fall to Interior to act as their own collection agent.
Yep.
Do we have that?
So that language, so different than last time, North Texas Groundwater District is actually entering into the agreement with Interior. So they will be the contracting agents, and then the other 8 will enter the interlocal, and it does have some language about that in the interlocal.
So North Texas would have to be the bill collector.
Correct. North Texas will have to be the bill collector.
I've been bill collector unless they're going to bill us. In other words, if somebody fails to meet their agreed upon number, then it should not fall back to Upper Trinity to make up 1/8 of what they didn't pay.
Right.
It should fall back to Intera or North Texas.
Correct. That is the way the contract is written with North Texas. And basically the way the interlocal will be, it will set out Exhibit B. This is what each district shall pay, and we won't be responsible for any more than what's stated in Exhibit B.
All right.
If we're sure of that. Our attorney has reviewed it and is also okay with it.
All right. And our attorney went through all that last time. So.
Correct. Correct.
Any other questions, Doug, on the GMA 8 agreement?
I thought you were saying that a couple of the smaller ones are going to be somewhere around 20,000.
Correct. That's what they expect. Yeah. So what we end up paying would actually be less than 1/8. Actually, I expect it to be closer to like 1/9. I expect that third of the three districts to probably participate fully, and then two districts to kick in 20 grand or so.
There's 8 districts?
There's 11 districts. Correct.
And for the board members who weren't here back then, that was a problem before. A lot of the districts just didn't have the budget. And so several of them had to just bite the bullet, and we being one of them.
Correct.
But if you wanted to have a dog in the hunt, you had to pay the fee.
Correct.
So any other questions? I'd entertain a motion to approve the interlocal agreement related to GMAA. Authorize our representative, which is our general manager, to execute that agreement on behalf of the district.
So made.
Was that Brent down there? Yes, or no? Sir. It was Brent. Motion by Director Wilson. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Second by Director Micah. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 5, discussion regarding the following potential violations of district rules and take action as necessary. A1, A is exempt wells, water well drill without an approved registration by Gap Drilling Water Well Service at 9538 Evergreen Cemetery Road in Lipan and Hood County. Doug?
Yes, sir. This is actually, Lena found this one, I believe. She found a state well report. And I contacted the driller, sent an email. But basically, in February last month, Lena found the state well report. Staff visited the well location the next day, or that day. Well was drilled, completed. I got some pictures here in a second. District staff verified the water well met all spacing requirements. But the well does not appear to meet TDLR standards, at least when we were there. There's the well. The downhole picture is what I want you to see. There's obviously no annular seal at the surface. It's just a sleeve, surface sleeve just around the casing. They just kind of walked off and left it like that, capped. I don't know if they didn't make much water and they just left it like that, but that's the way it's sitting there. It was sitting there when we were there in February. So it's pretty straightforward. You know, again, they drilled the well. This is Gap Drilling. I think they just only recently started doing business in the district. Is that correct, Lena? They're out of Hamilton. That's correct. They were notified. I sent them an email. So they are aware of it. They responded. So my recommendation is to offer a settlement in lieu of litigation, a first violation, $500 penalty fee, requirement to submit a new well registration application along with all fees, and forfeiture of the well completion report. Tracy, when you and I talked earlier, you'd mentioned something about adding some language about bringing the well up to TDLR standards.
And it's a question for the board, but I'm reluctant to offer them a settlement offer until they bring it up to TDLR standards. Because as it is, where it is, contamination could easily happen.
Or plug it.
Huh?
Or plug it.
One or the other. And then at that point, offer them a settlement. But that's just just me. And like I said, I'm getting cantankerous about it.
Is it possible for them to bring it up to TDLR standards?
I don't know that Blaine dug around the hole to see how they completed it. You know what I'm saying? He just walked up and looked down the surface sleeve and saw that there was, you know, nothing around it. So I'm guessing they could.
I think we need to put a time frame on this
thing. Yeah, and that's what Tracy and I talked about earlier. Like 60 days.
Along with what Tracy said, but make sure we include, we're getting ready to have some, I mean, the contamination aspect of it. Can we add some language to the point of it be brought up to TDLR standards within 60 days or this settlement offer is voided?
Sure.
And let us bring back to the board.
And who would bring it up? The driller.
The driller.
Correct.
Okay. Is the driller going to be available?
I mean, he's got a TDLR problem here too, as well as with us.
Did you ever hear back from Adam? You sent this to Adam, didn't you?
He's about no more permits until he brings it up.
Well, they don't do very much in the district.
Yeah.
They're out of Hamilton County.
I think TDLR has been notified of this too. Blaine sent pictures to Adam with TDLR.
But I do think before we do a kind and gentle settlement, we need to make sure he's brought it in compliance.
Correct.
Now, whether it's we table this or...
Well, I think, you know, and this is up to you guys, I think as part of the settlement is, you know, bring it up to TDLR standards, and they have to meet all the requirements of that within 60 days or it comes back.
Make that the first requirement that he has to bring it up to TDLR standards, and then the rest of the provisions kick in.
Yeah.
Or plug it.
That work?
Yes. That way we're not speculating.
Yeah, correct.
Brings it up to TDLR or plugs it.
Or plug.
Or plugs the well.
60 days.
Yep.
That work?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I the way I write it up in his notice was like that. And then obviously the penalty fees, submittal of, well, they also need to submit a new well registration and pay the fees. That needs to be up front too. But all of those will have to be fulfilled within 60 days.
And if not?
And my point, because I asked Doug to confirm, make sure I wasn't dreaming it. There's actually two violations.
Yeah.
They had to register and fail to meet TDLR requirements, which is one of our provisions.
Correct.
So we could actually have two major violations.
Correct. Yeah.
So if he fails to do it, then we vote.
He come back and have $1,000 and $5,000.
They know that the $500 penalty may not exist. Maybe.
Yeah. No. That's exactly right.
Settlement.
Yeah. When I usually send out those letters, I say failure to accept this and comply with it in 60 days could result in much higher penalties and yada 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 and in potential litigation. So.
Okay. What would
the TDLR... and can you follow all that? Are you sure? Okay. I don't mind restating if I need to. Okay.
Tracy, can we add that?
And.
No.
So you can't do that.
Yes, Brent.
Can we add that the driller receives no new permits in this district until it's brought up to standards?
Brian, are you on? Can we do that?
Did he hear that?
Did you hear that, Brian?
Sorry.
Brent asked, as part of this, violation settlement agreement, could we put a stipulation or put one of the stipulations in the settlement that he has to accept all of them, fulfill all the settlement agreement. So bring the well up to TDLR standards, submit a new well registration, pay the fees, $500 penalty fee associated with the first major violation. He has to do all those before we can approve any more registrations within the district.
Before we can approve any for him for that well drilling company,
correct?
I don't think we can do that.
Okay.
Because you have other landowners that you know have a right to a well and may have a contract with the guy.
Okay.
And sorry, I don't think Brent has a microphone on, so I couldn't hear you.
Yeah.
Doug.
Yes.
Do we know if TDLR takes any action on cases like this?
They generally do. I mean, you know, it's one guy for the whole state, so they're behind. But generally, they make the trip around and check stuff out.
If he does bring it in, plugs it, or brings it into compliance, would that then go away with TDLR?
Correct.
Or would he still have
correct
violation that exists?
Nah, that's usually what they do is they slap him on the wrist and make him bring it up to compliance. So that would be okay with them if he did that.
If we cure it before they get here, they'd probably be happy.
Right, right. And that's why we've got an MOU with TDLR to help them with stuff like that, right?
We can be slow to react when he turns in a permit, though, can't we?
I mean, no, we have provisions.
We have time frames.
Yes. I'll make a motion that we approve the settlement offer as amended.
I second.
I heard a second. Any further discussion?
Oh, wait, I thought that we were.
We haven't made a settlement offer. We've made a suggestion. We haven't set down the penalty yet on the fee.
I thought we were going to make sure he complied with
the first provision.
My recommendation would be to do all of it within 60 days.
I'll bring it up, but we're not settling it completely.
Correct.
It's going to come back again.
Correct. That's the way it works for any of these settlement offers that we send out.
Yeah. Somewhere along the line, it states that it's going to be reviewed again. I don't want him to understand we're done. Once he gets it, it's over with. It's finished.
Correct. That's.
I don't want that.
Correct.
To be able to understand that once he's done that, he may get fined.
If I could, well, I think he should get fined regardless of whether he's done it. And that's why if I restate my recommendation, he has to complete the well up to TDLR standards. He has to submit a new well registration. He has to pay the new well registration fees and deposit. He has to pay the $500 penalty fee. He has to do all of that within 60 days. If he misses one of those things within 60 days, it comes back to the board. If he does all of those things with 60 days, it's done. Right. That's cleaner. I mean, we do what you want. It makes it easier on staff, right? We don't have to spend staff time again preparing something for the board that they've already done and then sending him back and getting more penalty fees. This is the way we've always historically done these things.
Okay. So.
But I'm happy to do anything. I mean, it's y'all's deal.
He's got to bring it up and take care of it within 60 days.
I just want to make sure that he knows it. It's in there. The point is,
correct.
It's not signed, sealed, and delivered until then.
Correct.
That it's got a little open end for an additional finance.
Correct. And that's the thing is, if he doesn't fulfill all of those things, which includes bringing it up to TDLR standards, if he doesn't do all of those things within 60 days, it comes back to the board. The entire settlement goes away. And then the board can then say, this is the first violation, $1,000, second violation, $5,000, and multiple days of a continuing violation, yada, yada, yada.
Okay. And if he doesn't do it in the 60 days, this offer is voided.
Right, right. That's the way we always do these. That's easier for staff because we're not spending additional time doing something we can just do on the front end.
Then I second the motion.
Actually, Shannon beat you to it. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Item 5.2, well ID 16606 in Wise County, owned by Crosswire Properties, LLC. Doug?
Yes. Jenny, would you turn the AC down? Well ID 16606, it's in Wise County. Well was submitted by Crosswire LL Properties LLC in late 2021. It was approved, drilled in early 2022. In November 2022, the owner subdivided the property, and I'll get a bit more into this in a second, but when that application was submitted and approved, the owner said that he intended to subdivide the property. They subdivided on November 8th. After visiting a location for a nearby well, staff had noticed that, or in November we saw this. He subdivided it prior to that. November staff noticed that it looked like a property line had been put in pretty close to that well. Staff went back out, measured, verified. And then actually this time last year is when he subdivided it. So this picture right here, let me show you. Laser pointer. This picture right here shows, so this is just a homestead exemption property line. This shows this was just a private road through this property. It was a large property, 60, 70, 80 acres, something like that. Everything okay?
Wind.
So this is the way the property existed when we approved the application. This is the way it exists now. There's a property line running right down this private road. And there's a lot here and a lot there. And that well is now about 20 feet from that property line. Obviously, district rule 4.3E says you have to maintain the acreage requirement and the spacing requirement once a well is approved. If they fail to do that, the district can, you know, reduce the amount of groundwater authorized or require the well to be plugged. Additionally, TDLR rules state that the well has to be 50 feet from a property line. For a well less than 50 feet to a property line, it has to be pressure cemented down to 100 feet or top of water. This well is gravel packed to 10 feet below surface and has 10 feet of cement. So it does not meet the TDLR requirement for being less than 50 feet to a property line. Additionally, before approval, when the owner notified staff that he intended to subdivide the property, this is the email that was sent to staff that basically said, you know, hey, once you subdivide that property, make sure it's got 2 acres around it and make sure the well is 50 feet from the property line. So they were notified before they did it. So my recommendation is first violation. Sorry, I didn't update that recommendation. I apologize, guys. My recommendation on this is a first violation, a $250 penalty fee. I just didn't update the Mr. Mize. This should be to Crosswire Properties. $250 penalty fee and a requirement to plug well 16606.
Could they not move the property line?
They could. So we can change the word from plug the well to bring the well into compliance with district and TDLR rules, which would require either plugging the well or moving the property line.
Let's certainly do that.
Because the cost of a well may justify buying
right.
2 feet of land.
Right. Right. And the two properties are in two different LLCs, but I think they have somewhat common ownership.
I'm glad to see staffs notifying these people, forewarning them.
Yeah.
That when they subdivide, you still got to meet the 50-foot setback.
Yeah, we've been doing that for a while because of the issue this.
Yeah, we've been down this road a number of times over the years. And because of that, I'd rather see a $500 penalty.
Okay.
Personally.
Okay.
But that's the board's choice on that.
I have no problem with that.
I mean, they were warned.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't pay attention.
Right.
Hey,
gentlemen, my name is Brad Culberson with Crosswire. I'm on the call.
Certainly.
We apologize for this. We didn't have any idea what the property lines were going to be prior to drilling the well. And I respect everybody's comments. I don't think we can move the property line because it will embed in the private road that we use for access to other lots. I just wanted to share that with everybody as you talk through this.
If the property line was moved, could you not make the private road and private easement?
Well, so that's what we originally went off of. We assumed the center line of the road when we measured that far out. But with the easements that were given for the private road, it moved the lot line that we could actually sell for a lot closer. And that's where we embedded in the 50 foot. So we've got a battle either with you guys or, you know, with the county on the private road regulations. Well, and I'm not, you know.
I think the thing to bear in mind, it's not just us, it's also TDLR, because the well's not up to TDLR standards to be within 50 foot of a property line.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, we understand that.
We want to give a time frame as well.
90 days, 90 days,
60 days.
So, I mean, they may not be able to, if they're going to plug the well, they may not be able to get it out there and drilled. I would say, you know, 60 days to have a new well application submitted to start the process, right?
How long to complete?
And then within, you know, that gives them the normal 120 days to drill, no extension.
We'd add to the general manager's recommendation to plug the well or adjust the property line to bring it into TDLR compliance. by submitting a new well application within 60 days or addressing the property line.
Correct. Yeah, that works for me. I can make sure the motion's worded correctly.
Adjust the fine to 500.
And once the fee, taking what Doug just said, and once they've submitted the new well application, they have 120 days to complete the well, no extensions.
Correct.
I think I heard you say. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable for this.
Could you go through that? What's your recommendation?
So my recommendation would be offer a settlement to Crosswire Properties in lieu of litigation to include the following: a first major violation of district rules, a $500 penalty fee, and the requirement to bring well ID 16606 into compliance with district and TDLR rules by either submitting a new well application to begin the process to plug and replace this well within 60 days or to adjust the property line within 60 days. Should they decide to plug the well, then the new well application shall not be granted an extension. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Does everybody understand? Did you make that as a motion?
I'll make that motion.
You'll make that motion.
Director Nay made a motion for the settlement offer to Crosswires as amended. Do I hear a second? Second by Director Berkeley. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Doug, one question separate from the vote. Could they do anything with a water rights easement? It would.
Could.
But will that solve the TDLR issue?
Probably not.
Okay.
I thought of the same thing, but I then thought.
Yeah.
TDLR wouldn't.
It would work for us, but I don't think it would work for TDLR.
Yeah.
Because TDLRs is for contamination, right? And it's still surface property, and right.
Has this been reported to TDLR?
This one has not.
So it will be within the next 60 days if action's not taken?
Correct.
Gentlemen, just from an educational standpoint, why the 50 foot? I'm not arguing. I'm just asking. Is contamination from the road?
The TDLR requirement is for contamination because you can't control what happens off your property. That's why they require higher standards for a well less than 50 feet. Our requirement is actually to help keep the cone of depression created from the well, created by the well when the well pumps, on the property of the well owner. So in other words, to help keep from that well from pulling water out from underneath the neighbor's property.
Understood. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Tracy, you have.
So would it be possible
to see them at this point? Your name, please.
Trevor Holdenberg. I'm with COVID. We're affiliated with that.
Okay, go ahead. What were you asking?
Would we be able to bring it into compliance by pressure sealing yet, since it is under the 50 foot?
So that would not satisfy our requirements because that would satisfy TDLRs. That's pretty difficult to go back in and pressure cement a well that's completed. I mean, yeah. It's almost impossible. I mean, I don't say nothing's impossible, but yeah, you're going to tear it up.
You'd wind up crushing it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Potentially.
Or bursting.
Bursting it. Yeah.
I've heard the suggestion before too, but he's the one that does that for a living. Yeah. All right. We ready to move on? Item B, discuss potential violations for district rules for non-exempt wells pumping in excess of authorized amount. A is Aqua Texas, and I didn't count up. What is there, about 12 here?
Correct.
Doug?
Yeah, before we get started on all these, just want to point out District Rule 5.1A states the maximum quantity of water produced under calendar year for an operating permit is the amount issued under that permit. The maximum amount that can be pumped under a historic use permit is the amount issued under that permit, authorized under that permit. The fee and civil penalty schedule is for the first violation of pumping in excess of the authorized amount, an overage fee of 3 times the groundwater use fee for the amount produced exceeding the amount of authorized production, and the civil penalty of 5% of the groundwater use fee for the entire amount of production authorized by the permit, or $100, whichever is greater. So I've broken these up into three groups. The first one is Aqua Texas. Aqua Texas has pumped, overpumped 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 systems. I can go through each one individually if you want. Shannon and I had talked earlier, the grand total, these are spread across the Hood, Parker, and Wise County. Grand total of 55 million gallons overpumped.
5.7.
But yeah. Oh, for the 13 systems. It's pretty self-explanatory. I mean, we've issued a permit volume. They overpumped that permit volume. My recommendation would be a motion that they had committed a first violation and pumped in excess of their authorized permit amount, and assess or confirm the additional fees as outlined in the district civil penalty schedule and district rules.
Additionally, Doug, we did warn them that it was likely they would exceed and that they had opportunity to request a change in their permit so correct. That they could meet what they were going to pump.
Correct.
These were all basically historic use permits, weren't
correct.
They? They could have requested an operating permit to add on additional capacity to each system.
Correct.
Doug, what was their mindset? I mean, to me, that's real relevant. Did they mess up 13 times by accident? Did they?
I don't have a justification for every system. I know some of the systems, and talking to Matt, and he can probably address this better than I can. Some of the systems, it was very likely because of last year being hotter and drier than ever. Some of them, they may have added on commercial, or I think they added on a vineyard to one of the systems. Other ones, it could simply be pipes. They could just be leaking water. I mean, when we talked to Daryl, Kyle's not here. He's a, I'll tell you about where he and some others are going tomorrow, but, Kyle talked to Daryl, and I think Daryl was kind of taken by one of them that was pumped really a lot over the system. He didn't quite realize that. And I think it's probably got some leaks in that system. Matt's kind of giggling. So I think it's a mix of things, right? And you know, it's just, it is what it is.
Is this going to cure the problem?
I think they intend to, we have operating permits in house for them to increase their allocation, because most, if not all of them, they have additional acreage under their CCN, so they could get some additional allocation. There's one that's going to be an issue because the wells are outside the CCN anyway. That's we'll tackle that when we get there. But, you know, they did not address that at this time, right, or in a timely manner.
Oh, no, because this was on our agenda last month. And I believe one of the systems had an allocation, their historic use permit was like 48 million gallons a year, I believe. And they pumped 68. So they were 40% over what their allocation was, which is substantial.
Doug, when did the notice of concern go out to Aqua Texas, roughly?
We actually had a conversation with them last year. And they came in October, I think. So we had talked to, just in talking with Daryl, it came up mid last year. And then after that conversation I had with him, they actually came in October and asked, you know, hey, what do we have to do? And here's like, you know, we need all the operating permits. If you can get them all submitted by the end of the year, then this won't be an issue. I think we got the operating permits in January, maybe December. I think they paid for them in January, February, and we've still asked for more information because, I mean, even what they asked for, they pumped more than what they asked for on some of them. So,
are they administratively complete?
At this point, no.
Any or all?
None of them, because we haven't been provided. Well, and that's a question I have for Brian. If they are administratively complete, then we'll schedule for hearing next month, and then if I hadn't got the information, we'll just table it. I was going to talk to Matt about that later. But we've asked for, they didn't provide us justification for their request, right? It was just a blanket 20% increase. We said it's got to be some sort of non-speculative justification. They came back with something that didn't make a lot of sense. And then in talking with Matt, we looked at one example and Matt knew off the top of his head what that system was. So I think Matt's working on justification for those. Hopefully we can get that those permits scheduled either next month or the month after.
And our permit rules require a justification
correct
for the request.
Correct.
It's not just a speculative.
And non-speculative justification, right.
That's not a phrase the staff's bringing up. That's
right.
In our rules.
Correct.
Are any of them administratively complete by January 1st?
No. No, they weren't even paid until February.
So looking at this, we have 13 systems. We have 13 different first-time violations.
Potentially, yeah.
Because they are potential violations. Because yeah. They are individual systems.
Correct.
We're not treating all 13 as...
Right.
But they happen to all be owned by Aqua Texas, but we're treating them as individual first violations, potential violations.
Is that correct, Brian? Is that the right way to think about this? Is basically a first violation for each system, not necessarily for the owner?
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Yeah, that's what was in my mind.
And because second and third violations, the penalties in our permanent rules go up significantly.
Correct. Correct.
Some of these may not, some may, and hopefully none of them ever will, but we don't know what's going to happen.
Correct.
Don't they monitor or read how much water was pumped out each month?
They do. They have to report it to us semi-annually.
So they do have an adding machine?
Now, it appears that maybe they and some of the other ones we're going to discuss after this may not be comparing that volume to what their permit is.
Doug, on this is an annual amount.
Yes, sir.
So even if things are not administratively complete or approved by the end of this semester, this half a year,
yeah,
it still won't be another violation
until next year, right?
Unless, what if they exceed their annual amount by July 1st?
They do that, then it'll be a violation, right? Yeah, so it's an annual volume, right? So that would be crazy, but I mean, not impossible.
Well, it seems like we're in a unique place already.
Right, right. But you're right. It's reasonable to say that to avoid this situation again, they would need to have operating permits submitted, heard before the board, and authorized by the board before December 31st.
Assuming they're justifiable.
Correct. And that's what we're working with them on now.
Doug, can we assume, and I haven't, I'm just looking at these numbers. It looks to me like they're $40,000 behind on fees.
Correct. That would be about the amount.
Can I assume that they charged for that water?
Correct.
Can I assume that they charged more than $40,000?
Probably.
Okay. The penalties are $2,000, just looking at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if we charge, if they owe us $40,000, but they collected, say, $80,000, and we penalize them too, they're still ahead $38,000.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're being rewarded
for
violating the rules. So in my mind, we're locked into civil penalties, mm-hmm. and one minor.
So we outline in our rules, we have a penalty fee schedule for this, and I'll go back to it.
Which is 5%.
It's 5% for the civil penalty. And three times the groundwater use fee for the amount overpumped. That's, I don't know, and that's a Brian question, if we can do anything other than that, because that is outlined in the rules.
Why is it if you've got 13 wells, to me that's 13 violations. And the fact that the mental state may have been, let's just overpump.
Yeah.
Well, one question before we go too far down. What's the next round?
The next one is 10 times the groundwater use fee for the amount pumped over the permit, and the civil penalties, I think 20% or something like that. Then the third time is three times the groundwater use fee for the entire production, and I forget the civil penalties, something pretty high. It gets to the point where
the first penalty is a kinder, gentler, it accelerates significantly for second and third.
Well, right.
Greg, Matt,
I mean, yes. But you looked at it, I'm sure.
Yes, we looked at it.
I've got a problem.
They don't want to go there.
I'd like for you to, in listening to our attorney, it seemed to me he was a little hesitant as to whether or not this was one violation or multiple violations. I'd like for that to be readdressed, because to me, we're not penalizing them here. They played the cards, they circumvented the rules, well, and there's no penalty to speak of.
As I look, and I can be corrected very quickly, each one of these systems is a standalone operation.
Right.
Aqua happens to own, I think, 40 or so in our district, 41.
Right.
And these had issues, these 13.
Yeah, but to me, there's a violation with every system.
Yes, and that's correct. Correct. There's a first violation for every system that Aqua overpumps. So there's 13 first violations.
We spoke of one major violation.
So I'm sorry. It's, you know what happens when you assume, right? It was understood that was a first violation for each system. So it's 13 first violations. And here's the civil penalty from our rules. I put it up it's on your screen.
And so if only one of the 13 has a second violation, it steps up to the next penalty schedule. Because the other part is if there's 41, they had 28 systems that did not have any violations.
We're never rewarded for complying with the law. Doesn't work that way.
You're a master at understanding that.
You know,
there's no leeway where other situations where they're not complying with our rules, we have a minimum or a maximum.
That's a question for our attorney. On other things we have up to, and in this we just adopted a penalty schedule. Correct.
Because it's like
Mike, let me jump in on that. I mean, I think the way Doug's laid it up is right, because we have different systems with different permits, and that particular system has busted its permit limit. And I think you look at that. Otherwise, you know, if you own 40 systems, not only would we be in, if you looked at it the other way, you know, we'd be in our 30th violation, and there wouldn't be any, you know, which one are we going to pick to assess the first violation to? Which one are we going to pick for the second? We'd be in the
smallest one first.
In the fourth. We'd be in the courthouse on number 4 through 30. I just don't think you want to punish regional ownership of independent, you know, separate systems by approaching it that way. I just don't think it makes as much sense.
You know, right now for individual property owners, we look at them on a case-by-case situation. Well drillers, we look at them for violations over the wells they drill across the entire district, and that's cumulative. But
so that's an argument.
That's an argument.
But it's not in the rules. It's a standard.
But I think you have to look at each permit as almost like a standalone entity, right? Rather than the owner of the permit itself as the entity with the violation is kind of the way you have to view it.
And not necessarily this is the case here, but if system XYZ has 60% line loss, these penalty schedules, accelerating penalty schedules, eventually encourages them to fix their line losses, and then they're not going to be busting the permits.
And they don't get paid for line
loss. They don't get paid for line loss either.
And it depends on what side of the meter they are.
But in the same aspect, you said they've got more than 13 services. Let's assume you said they're all right. In 6 months, two others go over. Are they going to be considered first violations?
It's the first time that system is violated.
Or is it because we told you once, we told you 13 times, now you've done it again?
We don't have a provision in the permit rules to address what you're doing.
I'm just going with his argument.
I know.
Sounds like our counsel's conveying to us that it should be per system.
And I think it should, because when they find out next year that system, you know, number 38 overpumped, you know, that might have been the first time they were aware that the folks in system 38.
And it needs to go with the system, because they could sell one system off to another party, which does happen.
So can I say something?
And identify yourself for Ann, please.
Imagine
representing Papa Texas. I'm the whipping boy today because Daryl and Mike Hernandez are on vacation, so they asked me to come up here and talk with y'all. Several other districts.
Come to the podium.
Podium.
Under the mid, Mike.
So several other districts that Aqua operates in, they have one operating permit in the district. So just some food for thought here. If this district was to operate that same way.
You don't.
I know you don't, but you don't operate that way. Just food for thought, though. So Aqua, you know, has a permit to draw out this volume of water from the district boundary. If you look at all the pumping they did last year, which is, you know, obviously in violation, they actually would have some left in that bucket if you were to go to one entire permit.
So Matt,
I'm going to ask a question, Doug. So the system down by Lipan is drawing water from outboard.
I agree.
Are you going to tell me the geology does that? Because I'm going to say bull.
I agree.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, food for thought.
I think that's
the that's why I'm not coming.
System by system,
this isn't the Edwards.
Only because they sell.
Yeah, I agree.
They sell. And Matt, a separate thing is, if we did look at it holistically like that,
mm-hmm.
we'd be going back to these are 13 separate violations because each one is its own individual operational or historic use permit for that area.
Correct.
So we're not looking
but at. But we would not be in violation if it was
for one, the total volume. For the total correct. Volume. But each one is its own individual.
Right, which site-specific
location, which would be 13 violations mm-hmm. instead of 13 first-time violations.
And while it's not the case in our district yet, right. there are places in the state where that threshold is the limit of what's available water. Mm-hmm. And if you bust over it, then you've taken somebody else's water
mm-hmm.
that you don't have a right to. That's not the case here yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we recognize that's in the future. Somewhere.
Right. I think all of the violations, now, Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, I think all of the violations, with the exception of a couple, we have the land in the CCN to get an operating permit.
Correct.
Yes.
There's a few in the Granberry area that we need to amend the CCN to the correct service boundary, and then that would bring us into compliance.
I think there's one, maybe two, that the wells are outside the CCN.
Yeah.
I think the other thing on this is
that's
a whole different
matter. We can't get an operating permit if the wells aren't in the CCN.
Exactly.
I think the other thing is, you were warned.
Absolutely.
Texas was warned. And
absolutely. Aqua got a letter in June, I believe. We got involved in, I believe, August. Collier Consulting did. And Aqua drug their feet.
And I think what happened is I was talking to Daryl about something else. It came up, and he asked for the volumes that he had reported to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that started the conversation.
Right. So, I think there was some justification for us keeping separate systems rather than an operator.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because operators trade systems out.
Exactly. They buy
some. And they would have to come back and change your entire operator permit and everything else.
Well, and it doesn't geologically make sense here to do that.
I think I made that point.
Yes, absolutely.
You did.
We've got the next thing, too, is that they're going to be continuing going over their permit. We're going to do another.
Correct. We've got applications in house that we were just waiting on from additional information from these guys.
Mm-hmm. Like Matt said, he's got to
understand that.
Modify the
point is that I want to correct it. That's
yeah.
You know,
they've started that process.
I don't want it to be wait. I want this done quickly as possible.
Correct.
And they're working on it.
Yes.
We've been poking them.
Matt, when do you anticipate that these 13 will be administratively complete?
I met with Daryl last week. We went through each system, came up with justifications on the operating permits. We're putting the packet together now to submit to Doug. I'm hoping by the end of this month.
Okay.
The one that has a CCN issue, do we have a resolution? Or?
So, Aqua...
working on it
has made an indication that they're going to allow us to amend the CCN, but we are not under contract currently to amend the CCN with Aqua.
It would create a little, do you want all of them at one time or can we take them in two bites?
We can take them as they're ready.
Matt, if you got them ready, go ahead and get them in.
Sure.
Go ahead
and I'll get them in as they're prepared.
It'd be nice to have them approved before the SA1 reports come in.
Absolutely.
And just a question to follow up on this process, because it is somewhat new.
It is new. I mean, mm-hmm.
The whole protocol is new. And for the general manager to come in and approve a certain allocation of water, you know, per these water wells, okay, and we think that those are the assumed amount of numbers or volumes produced out of those wells, so therefore the level, the peak level ought to be set as far as, okay, there wasn't any formality other than just the approval of these permits over time because, hey, they justified it. They used the water. Now we have these incremental increases that may have come around due to the fact of other people moving in, you know, additional meter connections or taps made, or, you know, the climate, weather, how hot right. it was, how wet it was. Right. So there is an adjustment to this cycle
here. Well, we can't. So the historic use permit is under Chapter 36.
It is what it is.
It's based on historic use, right? And Brian can talk to you all day about what, you know, what the historic use permits and how that's, there's been issues with that have gone all the way to the Texas Supreme Court. We do have an operating permit that allows for these guys to increase the volume, right? You know, and you'd say it's a fairly new process, but I mean, it's almost 3 years old now.
Right.
But I get it, you know, but yes, that's the process, and they've submitted their operating permit applications. And, you know, that's what some of these other folks are going to have to do, right? If they saw that the historic volume that they produced that we're allowed to issue a historic use permit for under the law, if that isn't ample for the future, then they're going to have to apply for an operating permit. And there's a process for that. And
the other thing on this is it is a newer process. They were told about it in June, July. They had 6 months to pull this together.
And we held a whole long series of public meetings all the way across the district and went through these for several hours each time. Explain the process and how it would work. I seem to recall pointing out the penalties on these if exceed the public amount.
Yeah, we actually adopted our operating permit allocation and processes actually kind of came out of conversations with Aqua. So they should have been quite familiar with that process.
So, and I appreciate you, man.
Any additional questions that I could or could not answer?
Thanks, Matt.
All right, thank you.
Doug?
Yes, sir.
How are your exactly or civil penalties calculated?
So the civil penalties are calculated. The additional fees is 3 times the water use for the amount pumped over the permit, right? So you take the permit volume, take the actual pumpage, the difference, 3 times the water use fee, 22 cents per 1,000 gallons. So it's 66 cents per 1,000 gallons for that. The civil penalty is 5% of the water use fee for the permit volume. Right. So you take their permit volume and the water use fee for that will be 22 cents per 1,000 gallons. So 5% of that.
Of the permitted volume.
Say what?
You bring that back up.
Not the volume that they actually pump, but the volume
for the permitted volume. Yes.
Additional fees.
Or $100, whichever is greater. It's the one on the left, first by the
way. So with this, for each one of these, it is either the number you showed or we do nothing.
Right.
Is the options we have before.
Right. I mean, that's what the rules outline.
Right. It just looks like it would be better if it was 5% of what
was pumped. Yeah.
If this was a rule, this is
the rule. Yeah, that's the rule. And Brian and I went back and forth and we were putting this. I was telling Brian, we were talking about this the other day. I remember the day we had it all this drawn out on his whiteboard, but we settled on that for some reason or another. But
we did, and we went through every hypothetical violation you could find. And trust me, there's some hypotheticals out there that will cause you to go back to this one. The way it is.
It is.
Yep.
And I recall when we were discussing this, my thoughts were the first violation wasn't quite enough. But then I looked at the second one and went, oh, that's going to get their attention. So the point being, get the operating permits, get the permitted amount, so we don't have to spend staff time on this. Anything else on Aqua at this point? We have the general manager's recommendation.
Do I hear a motion?
Make a motion. We follow the GM's recommendation on this issue.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second. Get it moving.
Second by Director Micah. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, item B, Texas Water Utilities. And there are 2, 4, 7 here. For the board's information, Director Watts has to be recused from any discussion on this one. Correct. So it will take the rest of us to take definitive action. Doug?
Yeah, so Texas Water Utilities, a.k.a. Southwest Water, same situation. They've got 7 systems they overpumped. It came out to like 5 million gallons total across the 7 systems. Some of those were really small amounts. Oddly enough, they actually applied for operating permits for some of these and didn't apply for enough, and they still overpumped the operating permit. I think there's some of the ones on the right-hand column that have historic use permit and operating permit that we literally just approved the operating permit not too long ago, and they still overpumped it. They only overpumped it by a few hundred thousand gallons or 2 million gallons. But same situation, same story, much less volume. But yes, sir.
Have they applied?
They have not. So what they'll have to do is apply to amend their operating permit volumes on those they already have one.
So of the 7 you said?
Of the 7, I mean, they would obviously need to assess, and I'm not going to tell somebody what to do, internal assessment. Is this a one-off, or is this something they need to consider to increase their permit volume? And then, yeah, they would need to – the ones that they haven't submitted – they don't have an operating permit, they need to submit an application. The ones they already have an application, they would need to submit an amendment.
You said for Aqua Texas they received a warning June, July timeframe. Did they ever receive that before SA1 came in, or that would have been after?
No, again, it was a conversation I was having with Daryl, and I were talking about something else, and it came up, and that's how that happened. Southwest, I think when they had applied for another well, I think it came up when they were talking to Kyle, and they had actually noticed they were high on some of their permits.
Texas Water Utilities?
Yeah, Texas Water Utilities. Sorry, we still call them Southwest in-house, but they changed everything to Texas Water Utilities.
So essentially, this is the same song, second verse.
Pretty much.
Can we see the penalties by the rules? That's much less.
Correct.
Well, the overages were much less.
Yeah.
So all the arguments, all the discussions that we had applicable here.
Same.
I'd make a motion that we just accept the recommendation of the manager.
A second.
Motion by Director Berkeley, second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. And then Doug has suggested, because all these others are singletons, that we consider them all as a group.
Right. And I'll go through.
If that's okay with the board. Any objections?
Okay. And some of them are City of Toller, small city, of course, Red River Authority. Mobile Home Parks, New Progress is a small water system. Most of these are smaller water systems. They're one-offs. So, and each of these will be, you know, I think Kyle had sent something out after the first one saying they could, you know, if they need to, they could apply for an operating permit. And that would be an internal assessment on each of them as well, right? Was it a one-off? Was it something that would only happen 1 year, or they need to submit an application for an operating permit to increase their permit volume because they're growing?
Let me see the proposed.
Correct. There you go. Tracy, I think you have Randy would like.
I'm going to get to him in a second. I know. I saw him come in. Evening, Randy. Randy, do you want to address the board? Go ahead and come up. And if you'll identify yourself for Ann.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
Randy Wyman, I'm the general manager of the Red River Authority. We do have a well that, I guess, busted. I think this application process, I heard you say state regulations, I heard chapter 32 or 6 or something. I guess I don't understand how you're fallen on this chapter 36 that your hands are tied, and I'm in three other groundwater districts that don't even charge me for water. So, can you explain to me why, if it's a law, they're not even charging me for water, but you're fining me for going over?
So those are So those are tax-based districts. That's their income is their tax base. We're not a tax base. We're a fee-based district. And that's just the way our permitting system works out. We're a fee-based district, and then we issue permits. You obviously have an annual volume on your permit. You know, once you go over that permitted volume, just like, you know, if anybody else, if you go over surface water permit, you know, there are penalties for going over that permitted volume.
I don't know of any other penalties we ever went over that had a three times the rate for the penalty on top of the fact we already paid for the water, which is essentially four times the cost of the water. So I'm asking you, is that part of the law that it says it will be three times?
I'd turn that over to my attorney, but it's all authorized by Chapter 36 of the Texas Water Code, which we operate under.
So you don't know the answer?
Brian, you want to answer this?
I mean, Chapter 36 is not that explicit. Chapter 36 allows the board to adopt rules enforcing penalties, and these are the penalty amounts that the board has adopted by rule.
That's what I assumed.
Yep.
Just wanted to hear you say it.
Yep.
I think they're excessive. I think when we visit with the legislature and such, they'll think I'm excessive too, because three times the rate, our bill is essentially 67% of our annual, our penalty is 67% of our annual payment for having a leak in a water system serving rural Texas out in the middle of nowhere where we fixed the line and it broke again after we fixed it and blew out in the middle of the night. And we don't have SCADA. We don't got nobody to come tell us that's leaking. And I understand that, and I understand a fine. I don't understand three times the rate just to put money in your coffers. What is that money set aside for particular use?
Actually, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on another agenda item you're welcome to listen to.
So you're collecting it regardless of what you need it or not. But now that you're getting so much, you decide you better figure out how you're going to spend it. I think the regular Trinity Water Groundwater District kind of got in trouble doing the same thing too, where they were collecting money and not doing anything for the service. So it'd be interesting to see. So,
were you aware that you were approaching your permit limit?
We only had
the amount of gallons you were pumping.
Am I supposed to turn somebody off? I don't understand. We had a leak.
No.
We had a historical deal filled out by the application by your people that said we couldn't ask for any more than that. On the form, it said, if you want to request less than that, this is how. There was nothing on the form that said, if you want to request more than that.
Is, and it's been available to all the operating public water supplies that they can request an operating permit based on their CCN. And that was discussed when we were developing the permanent rules. It was discussed when we adopted the permanent rules. And it's been there from when we've done this permanent rule process. And you can request an operating permit based on your CCN.
So what is the cost of the operating permit to have one requested at this time?
The application?
Yes.
It's a $400 application fee.
You realize our CCN is everything in our basin that's not in another city.
Correct.
So I guess we can request that.
Correct.
Think that'll take care of us going over.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Of course, we'll pay a fee of three times the amount, essentially four times the amount of the water for the water we had for popping one time. I heard you talking a minute ago about some escalated fee for some other people's going over, but for ours, it's already there at the beginning. So
no, that is if there is a if they bust their permitted volumes for a second calendar year, there is a fee schedule in place in our permit rules. And there's also one for the third violation. The point being to request what you can reasonably expect to need for the system, and then we don't have to worry. None of us have to worry about it.
Again, in the application, that was not spelled. In the application, the letter that was sent to us filled out said the most you can ask for is your highest historical use.
For a historical use permit. An operating permit is a separate and distinct item. Well,
what I'm saying, we weren't sent an application for an operating permit or given us the information out. We were given information on a historical use permit based on the well we already had. We're not the groundwater district. We don't know everything that you know, Tracy. So I'm just saying,
We answered the questions that was given to us. We even added on because there wasn't a space to say that our system can handle 34 million gallons. But it's deaf ears because that's not what you wanted to hear. You wanted to hear what the historical was, and then you wanted to get you three times the fee. The historical rate, I understand. Maybe Chapter 36 says you have to do that.
You go over the historical amount. It's not for the historical amount.
I understand that.
Okay.
But we have a tiered system for our water sales. It starts out at $7 starting February 1st. It used to be less than that. It used to go to $8 something. Now it goes to $14. So the most you ever spend is two times the amount we're going over. And that's when we have to go find that water and maybe change our system to accommodate what they're doing. All you have to do is add a zero to the fine. So, you know, I'm just saying, I don't see how it's not excessive for you to charge three times the overage just because the board can adopt that if it wants to. And you keep referring to that chapter as if you had to. And you didn't mention that you didn't have to do that part till I asked.
Do you have punitive water rates?
I mean,
do you have punitive.
I'm saying they do, but I'm saying they top out at $15.
Do they work?
$14 for residential.
Do they work?
They again, we just put them in effect in February. Before that, we had two rates, $6 and
$8.25. Mm-hmm. Ringgold, Red River Authority, the only system you operate in our district is Ringgold, correct?
Correct.
Correct. You operate a number of other systems in other counties.
We 33 total. I don't have anything else.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to discuss this. Consult with Brian? You want to consult with Brian?
Yeah.
Show at 6:27. We're going to adjourn into executive session. Go find my statute number. 551.071 for consultation with legal counsel. No action will be taken in executive session. We'll return to open session to take action.
Where is this going?
Bear with me.
Okay.
These documents. That's why I'm turning them silent.
Okay.
I'll be right in there, guys.